I just had the most beautiful, powerful, inspiring conversation with Jeff, and he has been through so much loss. He lost his son to fentanyl. He watched his wife deteriorate and die of alcoholism and medication abuse because of the pain that she felt with losing her child and that grief that it caused. And he talks about all of that and how he has now used all of that and has so much gratitude and joy in his life and what he is doing to transform and impact the world. And you have got to listen to this interview. It was so good, so inspiring. All right, here we go. What up, party people? This is Nina Perez, and this is Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. You know, I was really looking forward to this conversation today with Jeffrey because we're going to be talking about some really cool things. Now, Jeffrey is somebody who's really inspired me in the last conversation we had, and I just got my hands on his book, so I'm looking forward to cracking that open and taking a dive into that. Now, he took unimaginable tragedy and he turned it into a mission that is saving lives. And Jeff really is, you know, he was into successful financial advising. He had a thriving wealth, he was with a thriving wealth management firm. And in 2016, everything changed. And when he and I were talking about a week ago or so, he was telling me about his 23-year-old son, Seth, who died of fentanyl poisoning. And all of that tragedy and all these things that have happened in his life, which we're going to dive into. You know, Jeff took this and started to create a purpose. And he launched a project called A Living Undeterred Project. He wrote a book. The book, we're going to talk about that. We're going to dive into that. And he just didn't stop there. He doubled down. And today he is really channeling all of that, what could be pain and tragedy and all that into hope for others with Brighton. And I want to talk to you about that, Jeff, because that's pretty powerful what you're doing. And so I know that I gave a little intro of you, but I want my audience to get to love you as much as I do. So tell us a little bit more about who you are, Jeffrey.
Yeah, I live in Cedar Rapids. Well, first of all, thank you, Nina, for this
Absolutely.
wonderful, wonderful opportunity. I live in the heartland of America, flyover state, Iowa. Not Idaho, like not potatoes, corn and beans. My whole life, you know, but pretty, I'd say I grew up in the Leave It to Beaver household, you know, three brothers, loving mom and dad, great grandparents, you know, just great opportunity. Not by any, you know, imagination, a tragic childhood or a tough upbringing. I was pretty coddled, you know, pretty fortunate to be in the environment. As
Awesome.
I
I
like
love
to say,
that.
the birth
I love that.
lottery, you know. And, you know, like life does, you live long enough, things pop up. And in my case, it kind of really started initially unraveling, I like to say, but I think I've reframed that now to be more opportunistic and not like a punishment. But at age 50s, when things really started to shake me, I guess, and detour me from what I thought was the illusion of success, the trappings of chasing something that was trying to fill a void that apparently there was something missing, that now as I'm older, I can reflect back and I can see some of these things. But yeah, I mean, through tragedy, and I really don't like the word tragedy because that to
Right.
me, I don't think that
Right.
identifies my story. But I like to share the story with the simple purpose, and we talked about this, Nina, that, you know, being vulnerable, I mean, it's kind of a catchphrase right now. Being vulnerable is like a superpower and stuff. Yeah, in a way, but it can be, I think you can have toxic vulnerability as well. And like toxic positivity, the same thing. And I catch myself sometimes saying, "You're oversharing, Jeff. You know, you say you're not looking for sympathy and pity, but the way you present yourself, it sounds like you are." So now I'm like, I'm evolving in my evolution. I'm evolving that as well. But
Oh, wow.
I feel very grateful to be in this opportunity to share what occurred in my life from age 50 to 55 and now up to 59, which I am today, which I am now. And hopefully someone can hear the story, gravitate to the areas of the story that fill them up with hope and love. And then parts of the story they can't relate to, that's okay. You know, I can't relate to your story fully. And I don't think that's the purpose of sharing stories, is trying to get everyone to understand. It's more of just, you're going to pick out things in my story that gravitate and that can inspire you to become a better human. And that is the power of vulnerability right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's also where people connect, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're right. I think vulnerability has become like this big catchword, and everybody's mm-hmm. trying to use it to get like the next person on their, you know, coaching right. program or right, whatever right. it is, right?
Yep.
But it's yep. true. Right? There's something to be said about that. And there's also something to be said about being authentically vulnerable. Mm. I never heard the term toxic vulnerability, though. That caught my ear. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Let's dig into that. But I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your journey. I want people to connect with that, right? Because mm-hmm. you've been through quite a bit of loss, and a lot of people have not been through the type of loss that you've mm-hmm. been through. And I wanted you to take us back to the moment where you feel like these things changed. And I know last time you and I spoke about, Seth, we spoke about mm-hmm. where you think the genesis of some of those struggles mm-hmm. began with him. And I wanted to talk to you about that. And, you know, like, what, you know, what was that moment you think that everything changed for Seth? And what were the, did the seasons of your life teach you about all of that? The grief, the pain, the purpose, what you didn't see or seen, you know, that kind of stuff.
A lot there to unpack. I'll step back in time and go back to October 4th, 2016 is that day. That actually today I made a post about death anniversaries that I can talk about a little bit later, about how you can kind of work your way through telling yourself a different story, because it's a big thing in this space. You live long enough, people are going to die in your life, and you got to find a way to not get, you know, hung up on some of these anniversaries that come up. Anyway, so October 4th, 2016, you know, it was just like any other day for me. And I was 50, happily married, my lovely wife, Prudence, the love of my life, 9 years younger than me, and just complimented me. And I hope I complimented her, and just that person you always, you know, you search for that perfect match. Well, I met her. Three boys. Seth was 23 on that year, or on that day. And then Ian was 15 and Roman was 13. I was coaching. I was running a wealth management firm. I had a TV show. I had a radio show, big house, cars. I'm setting people up for the, rest of the story. 'Cause it sounds like, oh, geez, Jeff, you're a lucky dude. It's like, yeah. I worked my ass off, though. I mean, I worked 100 hours a week, you know, slept in my car, mm-hmm. building up this investment. You know, it wasn't like I inherited anything. I always felt that there was an abundance of opportunity out there when I was young. I was wide-eyed and bushy-tailed, and I was a risk taker, and all that served me well until it didn't. And on that particular day, my phone rang at 6:30 in the morning, and you know, I looked at the number and I recognized it, and I knew that it was probably not going to be a great conversation. Like I expected something bad. And I share that in the book. When you read, you'll see what I'm talking about. And as it turned out, you know, I joined a member of a club that, you know, almost 40 Americans every hour join this club. Wow. Think about that. When we're done with this podcast, 40 people like me are going to get that call. And I got it twice in a 5-year span. And that's too many, Nina. It's too many. One's too many.
Yeah.
One's too many. And I got that call that became that member of that awful club where, you know, you're the parent of a deceased child, and he was 23. And it's like, he died of fentanyl. I'd never heard of fentanyl. Obviously I was aware of addiction and substance abuse because I had it myself. I was an alcoholic and a gambler for many years. So I was aware of that, but what was fentanyl? I didn't know what that was. And, but at that particular moment, you know, a lot happened on that day. I had to tell my wife, obviously our son was dead. And then I also had to tell the two boys, Ian and Roman. And that was a very pivotal part of what became even the name of my nonprofit, the Choices Network, and about the two roads parable, and about the, or always presented opportunities to go down what I like to call the better road or the bitter road.
Mm-hmm.
And that's no matter if you have a healthy, unhealthy relationship with eating or lying or pornography or anything that doesn't serve you well.
Mm-hmm.
You have a choice like every hour, every day. And so I guess I had to present the death of their brother as a way to not only make sure we choose the correct road, but also use it as an opportunity to inspire and motivate people.
Mm-hmm.
That this moment didn't have to be the unwinding of our family. It could have been the beginning of something beautiful. Now, I say that with the benefit of hindsight, Nina.
I was just going to ask that.
It didn't start off that way.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to ask you if that's how you really took it, that moment.
No.
Right.
No, mm-hmm. I had to show strength to my family, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, sounds sexist, but I'm the proverbial man of the house, and it's like captain of my ship. And, you know, my wife, we both played our roles very well. You know, I was the proverbial provider. She stayed and took care of the family and took care of, you know, the dentist and the vet visits and all the things that allowed me to go run my company. And mm-hmm. and again, it worked well in our family. And sometimes you say that to the wrong person, you upset people, but it's like, the reality is it was going well. My wife enjoyed her role. I enjoyed my role. Seemed like things were going good, but there was cracks in the foundation. My alcoholism had, you know, 32 years. I was a high functioning alcoholic. I mean, I think I'm a competitor type A type person. And to me, addiction was just another competitive challenge. Like, you know, this thing can't beat me. Casinos can't beat me. It's like, and again, all these things serve you fine until they don't. And on that day was the very first like awakening I had that, hey, you know, Jeff, you're not as king as you think you are. You're not as important as you think you are, you know? And just to show you, I'm going to take your son.
Mm-mm.
And, you know, as an agnostic, as a non-believer, that dialogue was difficult to have because, like, who took my son? Like, why?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
I don't believe in God, so I couldn't blame it on God. I certainly, I'm spiritual. I'm highly spiritual. But if there was a source or a higher power, like, why, you know, why me? It's like, what did I do? And that's the story I told myself early on. And so about a year into Seth's death, I'd taken a year off to work on my mental health. I didn't. I just sat home and drank every day. So my wife and I just became worser alcoholics, if there's such a word as worser. Just sometimes drunk twice a day, sometimes three times a day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
To the point where I got up to 190 pounds. And I looked at my wife one time out of the corner of my eye. She's walking by me with a glass of wine. And she was like fragile, like an old lady. Just like, and I'm like, oh my God. It's like, she's drinking herself to death right in front of my eyes. You know, here you go again, Jeff. What a great man you are. What a great dad. What a great husband. You know, and I'm feeling like absolute loser. Like I let down my family. And so that day I looked in the mirror, December 24th of 17, and I stopped drinking alcohol, and I haven't had a drop since. And
I really
did it to support her, Nina, because I didn't think I had a problem.
Right.
But when I realized a couple days that I wanted to drink, then I realized I had a problem.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I kept thinking about Seth, and I kept putting that face of his, that smile on every bottle of alcohol I saw, everywhere I went. And I just developed a very absolute respect towards alcohol, not a fear. I don't have any fear in my heart. But a respect level, and even like a reverence towards death. Like
mm-hmm.
you can't really have an enjoyable, loving, living relationship if you're so consumed with fear of death.
Right.
And so I just kind of let death become an ally in my fight to have a good life, you know, but not a fearful way, not in a fearful way, because there's nothing really positive out of living a life of fear. You want to live of inspiration. So, but I really thought me quitting alcohol would help my wife, and it didn't. And on June 29th of 21, my lovely wife, it's both of them right there, died of alcoholism, grief, trauma, depression, prescription pills. I don't even care anymore what people call it. They're not here. They're not here.
Right, right.
So I lost, you know, death comes into my life again saying, you know what, Jeff, we took your son. we're not done with you. You know, you have a lot to give to society. So I'm going to take your wife now. What the F are you going to do about it? And that's what I told myself. And so that, and then my mom died 4 months after that. And
it's such a hard thing to go through. Death is always so hard because it's so personal, right? It feels like a personal attack. Yeah. And you know, and also, you know, like how do you, and that's one thing, like, I think in your case, right, you were controlling everything. You were controlling your alcoholism, you're controlling your gambling, you're controlling your businesses, and now you don't have any control.
Good right? point. Yeah. I guess that's a very good point. I actually have not, really thought about that too much. You're right. I have been a control freak my whole life. And now, you know, the things I cared about the absolute most, that why I worked all those hours to build this life was for them, you know, to share it with them. And now they're gone. And so, you know, I just got thrust into this poetic, beautiful, awe-inspiring journey now that I just tell myself, why not me now? It's like in some perverse way, it's like, if anyone can not just survive but thrive, why not me? Here's another competition. I'm up against death. But not in a way where there's a winner, because obviously I know who's going to win. I mean, I'm not going to win that fight.
Right, right, right.
But I certainly
none of us are.
No, so, and yeah. I certainly can kick that can. So I lost all this weight, got into exercise, eat very healthy. You know, my only vice I really have, I think, is smoking cigars. I don't have many left. My wife's been gone coming up on 4 years, and I haven't even been on a date, Nina. It's like I want to fall in love with this guy. I need to really understand what's in this thing, this vehicle I carry around, before I can open my heart to anyone else. I have lots of love to give, but I feel if I got into something real quick, I might as well just start drinking. I might as well start gambling, or I might as well add a relationship. That's codependency. I'm not ready. And I'm okay with that. I am going into my 60s next year, and I don't want to be alone. So I'm starting to wonder, you know, is the universe going to provide someday? And, you know, if it doesn't, so be it. But I have to be open this time. I think in the last few years, if somebody would have shown up, they wouldn't have had a chance because I was too close. So, you know, all this is just kind of, I guess just kind of transcended me into a very grateful human being.
How are the boys? Because the boys, they went through a lot because, you know, losing their brother, but also losing their mom, but also losing their parents at one point, because you were both drinking and like drowning yourselves, right, in the pain and the sorrow and all of that. How are the boys contending? Because they were fairly young.
They were 15 and 13. And in my book, which you'll find out, I did a lot of research on death and how it impacts a family. And sibling bereavement was like the hardest thing for an adolescent to work through. It was not losing a mom and dad or a pet. It was a brother or sister. And then an older one on top of that, the one that you kind of look up to, even though you fight a lot, your older brother, older sister is always the one that you kind of, as you get older, think, wow, they had it first. They had it, you know, they had it rougher because mom and dad didn't have anyone to practice on. I think 13 and 15. And then, you know, then my youngest son comes out as a gay man a year before mom died. So, you know, that's hard enough in and of itself in this country with all the, you know, the unfortunate hate given towards any, you know, LGBTQ or, you know, community. And so, you know, here's Roman who loses a brother, a mom, comes out as a gay man, all before, you know, what, 19? All before 18. And then a dad who's, you know, trying to stay alive. So that Christmas when Prudence died, I said my mom died 4 months later. Well, that Christmas I sat in my closet and I shared this with you, and I'll share it with your people. But I tell you, when you have a gun in your hand and you're okay to die, you've kind of given yourself grace that, hey, it's okay. Death can't be any worse than living. This is what I told myself. Mm-hmm. Staying here was hell. There's no hell on the other side because I'm already in it. Again, that's what I'm telling myself. Obviously, I didn't pull that trigger, but there's such a powerful lesson in getting that close, getting that and accepting it, and then being able to come back, like being pulled out of the fire, like being pulled out of the darkness, and then being thrown back. And you're like, there's a tremendous amount of earned wisdom in an experience like that. Mm-hmm. That if someone came to me right now, Nita, and said, I've got a pill for you, Jeff. I can't bring back Seth and Prudence, but the moment they died, every moment of anguish, pain, torture, doubt, suffering, I can erase that from your memory. Would you take this pill? I'd say no.
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah.
If you're not bringing them back, I want to take everything that came with it because it made me a better human being.
Right, right.
And that's a fact. And I think anyone listening that's been through that journey, I don't want the cause of it, but it's like I think I talked to you the other day. It's like, you know, the worst cry you've ever had, or the hardest gym experience when you're in the gym and you don't want to go and you keep going one extra set or one extra mile. When have you ever felt worse?
Yeah.
It's like it's not possible. It's not possible to cry the hardest cry ever. It's simply not possible when you're done to feel worse.
Yeah.
I don't know how it can be, because the purpose of crying is to get all that out of you.
Right.
That's why, if there is a creator, that's why he gave us the ability to cry, was to like restart the engine, like reboot, like recalibrate. That's what crying is.
Right. It's a release.
So, yeah, it is. And so, and for some people it's going to church. Some people it's reading or doing a podcast or whatever. And my job, I guess, or my obligation isn't to tell you what works for me, but more to just give you more arrows in the quiver, more ability to say, hey, Jeff meditates, I'm going to try it. Or Jeff like doesn't drink, I'm going to try it. Or, you know, and I think that's the journey of the storytelling that's going on with your podcast and what I do. We both are very similar initiatives, because what is a podcast, Nina? It's just, it's sharing.
Each other's. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
And it's trying to help, not help, but trying to support what you're doing. You know, I'm the guest, so the attention's on me today. But when I resurrect my podcast, I'd love to get you on and hear the why behind. That. Yeah, to hear the why behind Straight Talk and what got you into podcasting and what you benefit from it. You know, it's like that's the most value I get from anything I listen to, is just a really good conversation. Like like I try to think of if somebody stumbled across the water cooler, and for young people, they don't know what a water cooler is. But, and all of a sudden, Nina and Jeff are talking in some room, and you're like, "Okay, I'm going to listen around the corner." It's like, "Wow, that's the conversations I like to have."
Yeah, me too.
Right?
Me too.
Yeah.
Okay, you're in that closet. You have the gun. I've tried to commit suicide when I was younger, so I get that moment. Yeah. I want to know what the moment was for you. What got you out of the closet? What got you out of the closet?
Well, since this is a Straight Talk podcast, you want me to be honest?
Yes.
My expensive suits are hanging up behind me on the wall. That's petty. I didn't want to damage the suits, and I didn't want my boys to have to clean up anything. That was my thought, is I want to just go out in the woods or something where I don't leave a mess.
So interesting.
Yeah.
It's so interesting, because
something as
like
dumb as expensive suits kept me alive.
It's not even, and that's the thing. It's not even dumb. It's something that you valued, right? Because you valued it enough. It's so, I believe
I have
that,
to laugh
right?
about so, it now, because it is actually, in hindsight now, it worked.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I do believe in God. So I believe sometimes he will utilize the things that we
think.
Well, thank
him strange, if he did. If he did, I
strange
it.
Or stupid or ridiculous, because it is the silly things that we may value at that moment. Right. Yeah. And it's really just a shift in perspective at that second. Right. Like, oh, I don't want to dirty the suit.
It literally just shifts. Second.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It distracted you for as long as it needed, because you're here today, right? So tell me now about this beautiful journey, because I cannot wait to dig into this book. I already have it next to my bed. It's already going to be cracked open. So I'm just, I want to know, what was the transition, right? Because right now you are helping a lot of people.
Yeah.
So, and I know that it's a long journey, but I would love to know, what is that? Like, you got out of the closet.
Yeah.
Jeff, now what? What happened there?
Great question, because I don't remember that weekend. I know I broke my phone. I broke my computer. I didn't want any. I was the most lonely human being in existence. But I knew I wasn't alone. I was lonely, but not alone.
I get that.
That's 100%. The dichotomy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to talk to anybody, because I just needed to sit in my shit. I needed to do this by myself. And for people that are suicide advocates, and they're always like, well, reach out and check in. I'm like, I get that. I understand that. But man, there's sometimes that you just don't want to talk to anybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, I get that. And that's where I struggle with sometimes, even checking in on my friends that I know are struggling. It's like, I know it's the right thing to do. The book says it. Everyone says to do that. But I didn't want to talk to anybody. So I broke everything. So if you would have called me,
that's a way to do it.
Yeah.
Forget the do not disturb. You just broke it all. Okay.
Then on Sunday night, it was just a storm. My door knocked and people came in, and I'm laying on my, just like you see in the movies, except I didn't have the pizza boxes and the tequila bottle. I had a Diet Coke and a banana or something, but boxes strung out, and just like you see in the movies. And my business partner's wife came in and was like, oh my God, Jeff, you know, we couldn't reach you. And then I looked, when my phone finally got resurrected, it was like 150 text messages. My sons are calling me, and I didn't realize at that time how much I worried everybody, because, you know, I really shouldn't be here. I was so ready to go. And so again, you know, out of the ashes, it's this, you know, this metaphor of the Phoenix. And then in my mind, I'm playing Rocky, you know, and he gets knocked down, and there's Apollo Creed standing over him. And I'm like, you know, after so many years of this, now I'm at the point where I'm like, I don't need to get knocked down all the time. I don't know why I feel this, it's just hard to explain. Like, I'm tired of getting beaten. I'm tired of beating myself down all the time. I'm just really tired of it. And so my inspiration comes from this app that we've built, and the feedback we're getting, and the engagement, and the comments I'm getting of people that are really seeing value in it. That is kind of where I've gravitated to, or been ascended to, or transcended, I guess. And I just feel like, again, why not me? You know, why not a non-tech CEO building a tech product that's working?
That's, you know, so good.
Yeah, because my co-founder, who was Seth's best friend, he's pretty much built the app. He's my tech. But it's like, you know, this demand is so high. There's so many people that are searching for things like Brighton, or a breathwork app, or a exercise fitness app.
So true.
Just, yeah.
Very, very true. Yeah.
You know, we're positioning Brighton as not like the end all be all, but more of another arrow in that quiver. So when that beast is in your front porch and trying to break in, and and you're scrambling like I was in my closet, you know, hopefully we can head off this from ever making it to your closet. But if you do make it to a closet, you know, how are you going to deal with it? You know?
Yeah. Talk to me about Brighton.
Well, first of all, the name is special. When Seth died, 3 weeks after he died, his daughter was born, and her name is Brighton.
Oh my gosh.
I know. So it just warms my heart.
That just keeps living on.
I know.
It's amazing.
She could have been, you know, Linda or Tina or Mary, but she was, of all names, you know, Brighton. It's like, you know, again, why not me?
Right.
You know, it's just
almost
like
going
back to that.
Honestly,
I keep coming back to that. It's like, I miss my family. I really do. And they're not going to come back in this material plane that we're all on. Maybe there's another portal or something that I'm not smart enough to know yet. And if so, then so be it. Maybe I'll never have a chance to see him again. Maybe there isn't an afterlife. I don't know.
Right.
But nonetheless, it shouldn't preclude me from building heaven on earth while I'm alive. And it's like, why do you have to wait to die to go to heaven?
Right.
If there is a heaven, it's like, why can't we just make our own heavens here? You know? So I'm trying to build a heaven on earth for me. And, it's tough because as I've done all this, the numbers are still getting worse. There's more deaths, more overdoses, more depression, more labels. And it's like, it's almost a futile effort in a way, but
I'm sure it feels that way, but not to the person you're helping.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, at the end of the day, there's one person that's helped more than anybody else. That's me.
Right.
I mean, I don't go to therapy. I don't take any prescriptions. What does Brighton do?
Tell us about Brighton. What does it do?
Yeah. So Brighton, took the idea of financial planning. So having a plan for your finances makes sense. We don't have a plan for our mental wellness. We have, we have things that we do to prevent fires, or to put out a fire that's already started. And you have things like breath work and meditation, but it ultimately just becomes a game of whack-a-mole. And, you know, I'm living proof of it. You got a serious problem with drinking. You focus on not drinking, and then other parts of your life fall apart and you come rushing in and you do an overcommitment of the gym, and then other parts of your life start falling apart. And so I noticed in the mental wellness space, there was a big void in planning, and everything was acute or episodic. So in other words, nothing happened until something happened.
Right.
So you have three kids, you just cross your fingers and you hope none of them have problems. And, you know, statistically, two of them probably won't, but one will. And then when they do have a problem, you come rushing in to solve that problem. And that's the Western medicine mindset. And that's treatment. Right. That's treatment 101. It's a broken model. And so Brighton was built with this idea of mental wellness planning to mirror financial planning. And in so doing, the asset classes for wealth management are stocks, bonds, and real estate and gold. You know, that's where you diversify your money. You don't put your eggs in one basket. We don't do that with mental health. We literally put our eggs in one basket.
Right.
There's no diversification. Mm-hmm. And if there is, it's not very good because everything's a biohack. Everything's cold plunge. Everything's right now, today. It takes 66 days, consecutive days of doing a behavior to make it a habit. Okay. We don't have 66 seconds today. And so what an app has done through the gamifications, through the streaks, through the routines, through the reminders, we're giving people a chance to get 5, 6, 7, 10, 15 days of working on forming better habits. Yeah. And that's all through science and discovery that we've used. And our app is all AI based. So our mood tracking, journal entering is all heavy AI loaded. And our asset classes for human asset classes. So again, if you could be the creator for a day, Nina, and you could like build the perfect human, what three areas would you focus on to head off most mental health problems, right? That was my mindset. If I could build the perfect human, what would my three human asset classes be that I want to invest in? And it was health, wealth, and purpose. So those are the three asset classes. Good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in my financial planning mind, I don't have a background in clinical diagnosis and all that stuff. I had a very successful career as an investment advisor. So what could I use in my journey there to transfer over to mental wellness? And for me, it was planning. It was planning and it was diversification, which fortunately for the app, there was a big market for that because nobody was doing it. There's not an app on the planet that's got health, wealth, and purpose as the only three tenets of optimal mental wellness.
That's why you needed to do it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Why not me? Because
why not you? Exactly. And also the fact that, you know, you can utilize all of your skills and expertise and wisdom and all the things that you already had in your back pocket, if you will, you know, to then kind of correlate that with the tragedy and the stuff that you've gone through to create something for that next person and the next generation. And so I think it's absolutely beautiful. I mean, I remember when we first met, I couldn't get the conversation out of my mind. I was talking to my husband about it. I was telling him how excited I was for today's podcast, because these are the conversations I love to have, because I know that there are so many of us out there just struggling with things and just don't know how to come at it, you know? And sometimes how are you? Good. And inside you're dying. You know what I mean? It's like, and you don't know where to go next. You just sometimes, because we have so much information, Jeff, right?
Yeah.
There's so many things coming at us that sometimes your brain just shuts down. Like you just can't no more. Right. I love that you're doing this.
Yeah. It got me thinking about, you talk about like information overload, and I kind of throw that up there with all these quick hacks and stuff. It's like, if you go back to your own life, and if you want to try to improve your life, I think you just have to understand that you got to put the work in. You've got to put the work in. And there is no hack. There's no pill. There's nothing you're going to do to get to where you want to go. And I think there's a false sense of, an illusion, I guess, of what happiness is. And I don't think our objective at Brighton is to make people happy. You can do that with cocaine.
Right.
You know, happiness should not be on the table for objectives in human flourishing. Because you can get that in ways that are not positive, you know, pornography, gambling.
So true.
Right. So I think advocates need to stop saying that we're trying to make people happier. It's like, or our happiness scale or joke, because that shouldn't be it's the wrong question.
Mm-hmm.
The question should be, how do we increase human flourishing through adding peace and joy in people's lives?
Mm-hmm.
That should be the question.
Yeah.
But it's not, because peace and joy takes what? Time, discipline, experience. You know, what 23-year-old is going to have any body of work to pick off information from? I've got 59 years old. I have a large body of work of living. I can learn from lessons. A lot of these kids I see becoming life coaches, they don't even have kids.
Yeah, I know. Oh God, it's so funny. Just having this conversation.
Yeah. Can you be a life coach when you just got married and you have no kids and you have a pet? It's like,
that's because AI does it for them.
Yeah,
right?
You can be a life coach to kids that have no kids that are just getting married with pets, but I'm not going to listen to a 25-year-old trying to give me life advice, or a 30-year-old that doesn't have kids. Or quite honestly, this is why I didn't go to therapist, because unless you were a therapist, Nina, that buried a child, I don't know how you can relate to me.
Right. Yeah.
I'm being in defense of therapy. To find somebody that's going to really resonate with me, they're going to have to bend through hell with me.
I'm not going to
sit with an Iraqi war veteran and be able to, I can say all this word salad to get them to think I know what I'm talking about, but I wasn't there. I can't relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's one of the problems with therapy, is you got someone who's gone through an extreme traumatic event, and they're trying to sit down to some therapist, and I'm looking at all the designations on the desk behind the wall, and I'm like, dude, we're not on the same planet right now. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can understand what I've been through, because I'm not your therapist. I don't have to understand what you've been through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm in your office. And so I've never had a really good experience in therapy for me. I've been two times I went to see somebody. I liked them. They were good people. Everything they said made sense. It just
wasn't hitting deep enough, right? Yeah.
It just wasn't, because it's like trying to talk to someone about owning a dog and you find out they own a cat. And you're like, You don't understand what I'm going through.
My niece died at 18 years old. She was in a drunk driving accident, right?
Thank you.
And her mom is kind of stuck in she's kind of stuck in this limbo. It's been years now. I think it's been like a good maybe 7-8 years. Mm. But her room is still a shrine. She won't take anything down. Like, she's really in that place. And I remember when the first time she laughed, we were like over there for Thanksgiving, and she laughed and then she stopped. And she pulled me to the side. She goes, Nina, I, I just laughed. I said, okay. She goes, I don't think I have permission to laugh. I don't think I have the right to laugh. And I just hugged her because
I want to give her a hug right now.
Right. Yeah. I've never lost a child. Never do I want that feeling.
But Jeff, man, you can laugh.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said, you can laugh. And I know if she was here, she would laugh because she was hilarious.
Yeah.
My niece was hilarious. But I'm like, you know, it's okay. It's okay to laugh. But it's that, Jeff, right? I feel what you're saying because I didn't have the words either to kind of, you know, coach her through that, you know?
Right.
All I could do was love on her, laugh with her, hug on her. That's all I could do, right?
And that's all anyone can do.
Right. And I'm just saying that your body of work is so important because unfortunately, we have way too many young people dying of fentanyl and suicide and drug addiction and all of these things, right? Unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And your app, is it geared towards the younger generation? Is it geared towards people who have had tragic loss? Who is it particularly geared towards?
Great. Another great question. You're full of great questions.
Thank you.
Initially, Gen Z was our market. But we started running into really barriers at schools, at colleges and high schools, just for many, many reasons. And for us to get to where we want to go, to sustain a business, you know, to be around, what good is all this if I close the app down?
Right.
We made a pivot into what I call the employee benefit space. And right now, as it speaks, I think our marketing material and everything is still geared towards Gen Z. So I would say, realistically, like 16 to 26 is kind of the sweet spot. But the numbers that are coming in because of the businesses we're starting to work with, I think right now we have more adults on the app than we do their kids. And I'm okay with that. It's like, you know, I know in my family, when Seth struggled, we all struggled. There could have been something to help me, but the two brothers struggled. My wife struggled. I mean, everybody struggled. And so the collateral damage in a family impacts everyone. And so we have a family plan where if somebody, if mom were to buy the app for their 17-year-old, up to six family members can get the app as well for free. So I was a big believer when we were developing this that we need to bring in the whole family because, and you don't have to have death and destruction like I did. Matter of fact, that's an outlier. More families don't have what I had happen, thank God. And more just have what happened before they died, which was horrendous.
Right.
I'll spare you any details, but to watch my wife just turn into something I didn't know, my heart goes out to her. Like, you know, Seth was an accidental overdose. You know, he was on the drug road and things like that happened. But my wife was trying to die. She didn't want to live. And alcohol and prescriptions was suicide by alcohol. And my heart, as time goes on, Seth's got 8 years now, he's gone, and Prudence is four. I'm having a lot more empathy. And I think about my wife now. The first couple of years, I was really angry. I'm not going to lie. I was angry at her for abandoning me and abandoning the boys. But that's so petty now. And now it's like, now she had her own issues as a child. There was a lot of abuse growing up that I found out in her diary, outside of the family and stuff. But it's like, I'm giving her a break, giving her mercy and grace. It doesn't, there's no good for me to hold any anger in my heart towards Prudence. I think about her every day. You know, Mother's Day came up and her 4-year death anniversary is coming up. And I talked about in cosmic time. So anybody listening right now, I think as we wrap this up, this would be a really good nugget to hang on to. You live long enough, you're going to have death anniversaries. It could be grandma, it could be a pet, it could be a daughter, it could be whatever. That's like a guarantee that when you're born, it's part of the deal.
100% guarantee.
Yeah, part of the deal. And someday I'll be a death anniversary. Just hopefully not today.
Same.
But the reality with death anniversaries and from a cosmic term or from a universal angle, it's just another day. I mean, humans put time is a human construct. I mean, the 24-hour idea, a year, a month, these are all things that we invented. You know, the universe just does what it does, you know, and then we
need order. We try to get order.
Yeah. And so I've treated now these just are days. And so today's a death anniversary. Tomorrow's a death anniversary. Next day's when Prudence's death date comes up, June 29th, I'm not going to make any special posts on LinkedIn. I'm not going to Matter of fact, I don't put posts of them anymore. I just don't. I think it's too manipulative for me to put a post of my son, and then all of a sudden I get 200 comments, and they're all, "Oh, I'm so sorry," and I you know, but, and it's like, I can make a post. I can make a post to inspire people without putting them on the, and it's like, I think I talked a little bit about some of my my experience with psychedelics lately, and how I had this real liberating my last experience in Panama. I just didn't feel like I have to carry them on my shoulders anymore.
Oh man, that's good.
And I don't love them any less.
Right. No,
but
I'm not.
I'm not living their life anymore through me.
Yeah.
I've got one chance here. I've got years ahead of me to be focused on my fun, my pleasure, my enjoyment, my laughing, my crying, my new relationships. And they had their chance. They're not here. Mm-hmm. I am. There's no shame in for me being a little selfish versus always being selfless all the time.
Right.
It's taken me years though, Nina, to give myself permission to have joy, because I was like your niece. I couldn't accept it. Yeah. You know? And screw it. I don't have time anymore to sit around feeling sorry for myself. And I love them more than I've ever loved them in my entire lifetime. But I don't need to carry that burden that everything I do has to be. I'm even considering taking their pictures down. Today's not the day. Universe isn't having me do it today, but it's like, there'll be a day where I won't have their pictures behind me anymore. Mm-hmm, I feel like they're always hovering around me. Mm-hmm. They're in my heart. I don't need them on my shoulders.
That's so good. And the reason I say that's so good, because there's a freedom in that, Jeff.
Oh, so liberating.
My God, there's so freedom in that.
I cried and cried and cried, and I kissed the earth. And I, again, a secular human, I'm looking up to the sky more of just because I think that's what you do. I wasn't praying to any God or anything, but I'm like, we all have God inside of us. Mm. I'm a God. You're a God. Seth's a God. Brighton's a God. It's like, we have little nuggets of stardust in us. And that is true. And it's like, I think we have everything inside of us. Mm-hmm. I don't think we need to look outside of us for anything anymore. I like spiritual connection. I love nature and all that. That gives me a sense of awe and well-being, but my inner fire comes from this ember in my gut that almost extinguished in that closet, almost extinguished. And then something happened in me, and it just lit up in this inferno. And now it's just a raging fire, and it's going to go down again. I know. And I got to keep feeding that fire, but in a way that's constructive and positive, and not full of fear, like, oh, I'm going to run out of money, or all, oh, the app's going to fail.
Constantly evolving.
That's all fear-based. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I have no anger in my heart. I get irritated sometimes when someone cuts me off, but I think to myself, maybe they're going to the funeral home to identify their child. Mm. You know?
Wow.
Maybe they just got divorce papers. Yeah. Maybe they just got a stage 4 cancer diagnosed. I don't know.
And all of that can be true. All of that
the
can
day,
be true.
The day that I found out they died, I was a wreck. I'm sure I ran home and cut people off.
Yeah.
It's like, we just need to chill a little bit and give our fellow humans more breaks, more grace, more compassion.
Yeah. More empathy, more love.
And that just permeates throughout the universe.
Yeah. You know, I can agree with that more. I'm right now in this very fortunate position that I teach underserved communities, right? How to, in the culinary field, so that they can get jobs in the culinary field, in restaurants or whatever. And what you're saying is touching me in a really deep place, because I was talking to them recently, and they know I'm Christian. They're like, "You're a Christian, aren't you?" I'm like, "Yeah, I am." And they're like, "Okay." And you know, a lot of them are trans and, you know, LGBTQ and all that. Yep. And one of the people who are trans comes to me and say, can I say something? And I was like, absolutely. Well, I have never felt more safe to be myself than right now.
And your heart just felt so good.
My heart exploded. I know. Because You know, I'm a Christian, right? So some people just have this really biased look that Christians are all out here, you know, hating on people and all that kind of stuff. And that's not true. No. Not if you're truly a Christian, because we really do love God and we want to love others.
Yeah.
You know, and for them to feel that safeness around me and to just be them was so powerful. So what you're saying is true. Let's give each other a break. Let's love on each other a little bit. Let's let that person cut you off. You know, maybe even, you know, give them something while they're cutting you off. Like, you know, here's a gift. Here's some, you know, goodwills to you, you know, whatever's happening, like something, you know.
I'll share a quick story with you. And I know we're kind of running out of time, Amy.
Yes, but, yes. I knew this was going to happen with us.
My son, Ian, and I, like a month ago, we were going to we're going to have lunch with his wife, my daughter-in-law, just the three of us. And as we're pulling into the lot, I see this lady in her car with a handicap sticker, and she's very confused. Like, she's probably in her, you know, 80s or 70s, but she looked very like deer in the headlights. And she pulls up and she has a map out that she'd printed off her computer. So she didn't even have like a map on her phone. Wow. And she was driving and she's like, "Do you know where this is?" And my son looks on his phone and he said, "Yeah, it's up there. It's around the corner here, and it's in a strip mall area." And, you know, we're late for lunch reservations. There's another group of people waiting for us in there. And, I just at the moment said, "My son and I will take you over there." I said, "Just follow us." So I got in the car and the lady followed us, and I got out of the car and parked her in a spot, a handicapped spot. She never would have found it on her own. And we're driving back with the car. I said, "That could have been Mom, Ian. That's somebody's mom. That's somebody's grandma." Yeah. I said, "And you know what? We're 5 minutes late for lunch."
Yeah.
But if everybody did that on one day, just take that cart back to the parking lot. Just help somebody in the aisle when they can't reach something, or in the airport, or just like, if we all did that, it's free, it's in abundance, and it's right. But we don't. We just don't do it because time is so valuable. And I'm gonna be late to lunch. I'm like,
I gotta hurry
up. But we made a difference in the life. Money.
Yeah.
Yeah. We made a difference in that. And it was like, to me, and it's the first time I've ever shared that, because I'm not trying to share it to get anything out of it. But it's like,
it's good to share though, because people,
And my son saw that and now he felt, and I said, "How do you feel right now?" And he goes, "I feel really good, Dad." And I go,
I love that.
That's what it's about.
I love that so much.
Yeah. But there's so many stories like that out there that I think, I think we're onto something. I think humans can do amazing things, and we haven't tapped our potential at all.
Oh no. Yeah. I believe that.
Just gotta get out of the way of ourselves.
I can talk to you forever, ever. Okay. We're going to end it. But before we end, I do want people to pick up your book and to also get that app and all that. So give us that information, where to find your book, where they can download the app, the whole thing.
Yeah, the book is "This One's for You: An Inspirational Journey Through Addiction, Death, and Meaning," and it's on Amazon, Audible. Our website is www.brightonapp.com, and that's BRIGHTN. I took the O out of her spelling, so brightonapp.com. And then on the App Store, Android or Apple, it's Brighton Wellness.
Okay.
And you can do a 7 or 14 day free trial. And after that, it's less than 20 cents a day. So it's not,
I love that.
Yeah. We made it. So it's an investment, not an expense, basically.
I am so grateful for you and what you're doing in the world. Honestly, I really am grateful. And I'm so glad that you chose my audience to pour into. And I couldn't thank you enough, because even when we met the last time, I'm like, you and me are going to talk for a long time.
I told you 45 minutes would feel like 5.
I truly appreciate you very much. Thank you for hanging out with me today. Thank you.
It's my honor to be on Straight Talk.
I love it. Guys, I told you, right? I know. I know, such a beautiful human being. I'm going to make sure to link his information below. I want to make sure you get that. I'm digging into that book starting tonight, so I cannot wait. But I want to make sure that you guys connect with Jeff, connect with the Brighton app. You know, let's start changing the world, because we can all do that. One person at a time, one moment at a time, right? So that we can really start to walk in the purpose that we feel like we're designed to, instead of what the world tells us to do. Maybe there's something deeper, longer, brighter, you know, things in our life that we just haven't even seen yet. So guys, thank you guys for hanging out with me. I love you so much. This is Nina Perez, Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. Until next time.